is now that time of the week where we are joined by 2SER wine expert Cal Lee. This week, Cal's going to be telling us all about the do's and don'ts of wine tasting and sorting out the superstitious from the practical. How are you doing today, Cal?
I'm fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. So why is wine tasting taken so seriously?
I think part of it is wine is a thing that I take very seriously, but I think it's also part of it is culturally wine has a lot of focus on trying to tell the difference between two products. Whereas I think with, and you see this as well in like specialty coffee, specialty cheeses, that kind of thing. But I think a lot of times when we consume things, we are sort of in the mindset of that it's like, hey, we're trying to make this thing as consistent or as the same as last time as possible. Like, you know, I feel like every time you make dinner on a Tuesday night, you're not trying to be like, cool, I'm going to see if this is as good as like the last 17 Tuesday night dinners I've ever made. Whereas wine really does sort of, and occasionally fetishizes, I think, those sort of minutiae parts there. But also part of it is because wine service as an industry and being a somm and doing all that kind of work there has been so sort of structured and professionalized, we sort of started to need to design structures around tasting and sort of like there's no like hard rules, but a lot of it, like this is why I sort of refer to it as etiquette, is that there are sort of certain things we as an industry have agreed upon primarily to make it so that we can actually have some useful information at the end of the experience, and it sort of helps with the professionalization of the entire process through that.
That sounds very scientific.
Yeah,
and very
I am a scientist, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, I could tell from the way you're talking about it. So what are some really big faux pas with wine tasting?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think the first and most obvious one is like being rude to the person that is like serving you.
Good rule.
this might sound really obvious, but it's like, I see this a lot, especially with more of the sort of like, oh, let's call them like the booze bus style, like wine tour tastings where they're just like, cool, we're just going to like go through 10 of these in a day and try and get like, as inebriated. Yeah, well, let's call it Hammond. And you see people who just become like really, really disrespectful to the staff who are literally their entire job is to make you have a good time. And I would consider that maybe like the worst thing you can do is just be rude to them. But I think in terms of more stuff that is like more specific to tasting in general, and these are things that people might not think about necessarily, wearing perfume and cologne is actually considered like pretty rude in a lot of, especially in a lot of somm circles, mainly because when you're spending an entire day trying to smell things effectively, if you've got someone next to you that is like really fragrant and aromatic, it can really throw you off and sort of puts a lot of stress on you. So the same goes with smoking as well, especially in sort of the current era. I think smoking before like going to tastings is pretty well frowned upon. And I think the other one that is maybe a little more inside baseball that people don't think about a lot is actually like completely finishing your wine before you finish the bracket, if that makes any sense. So it's like, if you've got a bracket, it'll be like, you know, two wines, or maybe you've got six wines if you're doing a flight or something like that. And typically what you sort of want to do if you're sort of doing a compare and contrast style tasting is you want to actually leave a little bit of wine in there so that when someone goes, oh, hey, but I liked, you know, wine number two way better than this, it actually gives you the opportunity to go back to it. Whereas if you've just got the empty glass, then you're there being like, oh, was
I think I liked it.
I can't really remember now. And obviously when you finish the bracket, that's when you drink or pour out all the sort of things at the end there.
That's a pretty good tip. So there's also a bucket for people to spit in. Why do you have a spit bucket if you're presumably finishing the sample? And what's with the weird mouth noises, the gargling you need to do?
No, totally. I guess I'll sort of answer the second part first. But sort of typically with wines, especially if they've like just been opened or if they're like quite young, can seem a little tight and closed off. You see this a lot, especially with stuff that's like all just come out of the fridge and they're all like quite cold. So a lot of that moving stuff around is for the purpose of like aeration and getting it sort of up to temperature. which means that even though you've only got like 15 to 20 to 30 mils of wine, you can actually get quite a lot out of it by sort of moving around the mouth and sort of seeing sort of what physical reactions the inside of your mouth has to the wine, which might sound weird, but like this is how SOMs sort of detect how much alcohol a wine has or how acidic a wine is by the like physiological responses to the wine interacting with the soft tissues in the mouth there.
It sounds like it could be slightly different from person to person.
And then part of that is like you, part of what you do in SOM training, right, is you're calibrating yourself to a set standard, right? So you can be like, okay, when I do this, this is my physical response to this much acidity, and you're sort of trying to, and you know, and then there's the master SOMs who do this for a living who are like, you know, can take one sip of something and tell you the pH, the TA, and the alcohol.
Wow.
Percentage.
That is incredible.
And just with the spit bucket, I think a lot of people might see this as being a bit gross or weird, but like I was mentioning before the top of the show, like I just came back from a university intensive where we did about 100 wines in 3 days. So if you're not sort of spitting actively in those processes, it catches up to you really quick, and it can get really exhausting. So a lot of it is like about keeping your palate a little bit fresher and sort of not letting yourself be sort of fatigued or bogged down by these things as you're going through the tasting process.
So say I'm going to a tasting, how honest should I be? What should I be telling the sommeliers what I think of the wine?
No, totally. And I think this is obviously there's a little bit of like subjectivity with this stuff. And, you know, if you're sitting down with like the one man winemaker in his like little shed and is like being all really cute, or sorry, they're being all like really cute and twee about it, I probably wouldn't go and just slam every single one of those wines because that's a bit rude. But big things for me is just like if a wine is faulty, I think being really transparent about that I think is really productive for everyone. I think if you like a wine, definitely tell people. I think if you don't like a wine, I think it's useful to tell people more in so a way of being it's like, oh, I don't like how this wine was like really sharp or really sour or like really tannic or really bitter. Because that means that, because the usefulness of having a palate, everyone's different, right? But by knowing sort of how the people around you tend to taste things, that actually gives you a lot more value when you get notes from them of what they're telling you they're tasting. So if you've got a friend who everything to them is too sour, when they're finally like, oh, this wine's actually really nice, you're probably going to find that wine not acidic enough, and you can sort of get that balance through sort of having these more honest conversations.
Okay, so definitely people participating in wine tastings have an influence in the scientific process of improving wines. So, Cal, what wines are you drinking this week?
Yeah, I'd like to shout out Binc Wines here, and I'd like to shout out the Little Chardonnay from the Barossa Valley 2023. We just had an event with them last night. This is a really fun wine. Coco, the winemaker, has spent quite a lot of time working with some of like the natty wine giants in the Adelaide Hills region. And Barossa Valley Chardonnay is sort of historically known for being very ripe, very buttery, very big. But he's using this sort of riper, richer fruit and making it in that more leaner, fresher Adelaide Hills style. And it has this real beautiful sort of synthesis of the two different ideologies. I think it's really fun. If you come to the bar, I'm pouring it for the next month. but yeah, that's what I'm drinking at the moment.
I will be making a special guest appearance. Yeah. Thank you so much for that, Cal.
Anytime.
If you want to see what else Cal has been educating us on and recommending, make sure you head to the 2SER website and search for Wine Chat. We'll be posting this interview up shortly, and you can listen to old interviews as well, which are very exciting.